Social Daily, the Premier League podcast.
Welcome to Football Social Daily. It's Friday and we're just gearing up for the first weekend post the January transfer window. Will we see some fresh faces? I'm sure we'll see some familiar ones, but we're going to try and tackle on today's show the big question: who had the best and indeed the worst transfer window? Arsenal, Chelsea, both spending a bit of money. Everton and Liverpool, not really spending anything at all. And we'll talk about both of those teams, Everton and Arsenal indeed, as both face off in the early kickoff on Saturday. A club who are desperate for points for survival, Sean Dyche's Everton, take on Mikel Arteta's Arsenal, who are looking to extend their gap at the top of the table. That will be just one of the talking points on today's episode of Football Social Daily. My name's Niall, and joining me for the ride this Friday morning, Marley Anderson and Joel Tudor. Morning, boys.
Good morning. Good morning.
Now, on a Friday, we've started this new format for the show, which is we're only going to give ourselves 5 minutes to tackle three topics. And as soon as the 5 minutes is up, that is done. We have to stop talking about it. And last week, Marley, you were pretty good at beating the buzzer. I will say that. I thought it might be a struggle for us because we do like to rattle on at times with our football opinions, but we managed to keep it in time, which was good going.
I've still got PTSD from hearing the hearing the buzzer, like it's as if some sort of bad thing was going to happen. I felt like a Saw movie or something. Like you've got 5 minutes to shut up, or you got to chew your own leg off, or something like that.
Did you ever watch that TV show back in the day called 24?
Yes.
See, I never watched
a little bit of it. Well, I know what you mean, though. You mean the ticking, don't you?
The ticking, right? Everyone knows that's the 24 ticking, even if you haven't seen the show. Maybe it's a little bit akin to that. All right, well, let's not waste any time. Let's get straight into it then. And the first thing we're going to tackle today, topic number one of three, is who had the best and the worst transfer window? Let's start with the best. Joel, we'll come to you first. Arsenal strengthened, of course, by bringing in Jorginho, and we know that they're in a promising position, top of the Premier League right now. At the other end of the table, Bournemouth and Wolves made some really important additions as they bid to survive in the top flight this season. Nottingham Forest also added plenty, including a new one just this morning as free agent Andre Ayew has arrived at the City Ground, whilst Chelsea spent an absolute fortune, I think. What was it, 400 million, something like that? I'm just plucking figures out of thin air, but I can't be too far away. So, over to you, Joel. Who do you think had the best transfer window?
I'm going to pick one that's a little bit more left field. I know now you're probably not going to like this one, but I think Southampton. And that's only because of the context of what they've done, which is that they're at rock bottom of the Premier League. I didn't expect them to pay that much. I think they paid close to 60 million for this transfer window alone. And it's with players who have got a different kind of profile. You know, you got Suleiman, who had a pretty good World Cup. Then you got Orsic, who brings a little bit more experience into the side. And when you look at the fact that prior to this transfer window, I thought if they didn't make any transfers in this, they're completely gone. Especially with the way in which the new managers come in and had, you know, six successive defeats in the Premier League. And it just looked like the writing was on the wall. But I think after paying that amount, it just shows how much backing that they've got from those owners. And I think going forward, I mean, they've just signed that Onuachu as well, the 6'7" great Carly beast from Belgium, and
highlight reel is incredible.
Yeah, if anyone's seen the famous hat trick of just fumbles, and I don't know how it ended up going in, to be honest. It was a bit crazy, but if he can bring hat tricks like that to Southampton, I don't think their fans are going to be too annoyed about it. But yeah, I think for them, just in terms of bringing belief, because I always know when players talk about new players coming into the squad, it always gives everyone a new lift, gives everyone new energy and just a new motivation. So I think it's going to be massive for them. And then in terms of the worst, I think it's clear that it's Liverpool. And we've talked about it a few times in the last few podcasts over last couple of weeks. But it's just so simple. It's the fact that they've just prioritised in the wrong area. And they've gone for a player who I know has had pretty good seasons with Ajax, but the World Cup has basically prompted their purchase, which I'm not a massive fan of. And when you look at their midfield, which has got, you know, a labouring Jordan Henderson, a Fabinho, who I don't know what the hell's happened to him. I don't know what cereal he's changed to or what kind of something's gone on in his life which has completely made his form go out of the window. And then you've got James Milner, who they're sometimes relying on at right back or coming in the midfield. It's just a complete drop-off in quality compared to, you know, the likes of the last 3, 4, 5 years. And I saw someone tweet that Fred, the Manchester United player, now easily gets in the Liverpool midfield, and you never would have thought to say that in the last 5 or 6 years. And that's the situation they're in at the moment, which is that it just seems the way in which they're going about their signings and the way in which just the owners are going about the running of the club, obviously following the announcement of wanting to sell the club, has just gone a bit strange. So Jurgen Klopp has got everything to do in these next 4 months, I would say. But I just think trying to get top four is completely out the window for them, because a good midfield is just essential for actually having a little bit of success in the Premier League, and it's just, I don't think it's anywhere close to being good enough.
Okay, so a wild card from Joel, who says Southampton have had the best window, but Liverpool have had the worst. Kindly, he's left you with a minute each, Marley, to discuss who you think's had the worst and the best transfer window. So over to you.
To be fair, I thought we were both going to pick the same clubs, but neither of what Joel said is the one I'm going for. I think Arsenal have had the best in terms of bargains. I think, you know, they wanted Mudrick, which obviously went the wrong way for them. But they assessed it really quickly and went and signed Trossard, which I think is just as good a signing, really, because I think they already had, I think I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, they've already got young wingers. You don't need another young winger to compete with other young wingers, and you want somebody with a bit of experience. Trossard at 28, Premier League appearances, Premier League goals, loads of them, playing, gets in the Belgium team and squad all the time. So I think he's a really smart signing for 24 million or whatever it was. And then they did the same thing with Jorginho, I think, reacting to a situation where, you know, Chelsea were on the way to the skip with all their unwanted players because they were bringing in 300 new ones. And then Jorginho is left surplus to requirements, and they've gone, do you know what? He doesn't even have to move house to come here. So it's a nice quick one to do, and it's more experience for a fairly inexperienced squad. So I'd go for Arsenal taking that. And they got the Polish centre-back as well, who, I'll be honest, I've never seen him play, but he's more cover for a defence, which might lack at times if somebody gets injured. So I think Arsenal have had the best. And without doubt, I think Everton have had the worst. I don't know how you can have anything other than the worst transfer window when you don't sign a single player and you're 19th in the Premier League. And you've got, oh, there's them bloody buzzers again. Yeah, 40 million in the bank from Gordon. Didn't spend it. You're just leaving Dyche even harder to, you know, do his job now.
Yeah, Sean Dyche, and he's got a tough job. It's interesting, Marley, that you've chosen, there's the buzzer. It's interesting that you've chosen Arsenal and Everton as the two teams to have had the best and the worst transfer windows respectively, because that's exactly what we're going to talk about next, because the 12:30 kickoff this weekend in the Premier League is at Goodison Park, and it is Everton in the bottom three against the league leaders Arsenal. So we've got a club who needs points to survive in Everton, just 15 on the board at the moment and really staring down the barrel of relegation back to the championship. They've never been to the championship, a first time relegation to the championship, against the club who are desperate to win their first Premier League title in 20 years. It is the 20-year anniversary, I think. Is it of that invincible season? Or maybe I'm one out. 19 years it might be. But still, it's a hell of a long time for a club like Arsenal to have not won a Premier League title. So we'll start with you this time, Marley. Who comes out on top this weekend between an Everton side managed by Sean Dyche or an Arsenal side who have been absolutely flying under Mikel Arteta this season?
It's the ultimate, it's the litmus test, isn't it, of new manager bounce.
Where's the cliche bell? There's two in a row there.
Yeah, nice little cliche brace there. No, it's, I mean, it's at Goodison, which is exactly what you want for...
Tough place to go.
For a first...
Ding, 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 ding.
For a first manager, first game, sorry, you desperately want a home game. You desperately don't want top of the league, to be fair, but it's, that's, there's another one. That's the way the cookie crumbles. it's tough, but, you know, you've got to get on with it. I actually think Sean Dyche will revel in it because there's less pressure than there probably would be. If this was a six-pointer against West Ham, like last week, You know, that would be a much more, like there'd be so much more instant reaction off the back of it if they lost or even if they won. But yeah, it's a tough test against Arsenal, obviously. But I think Dyche will be right up for it. But I look at Everton's team and I just think 1-11, you are not a good squad. I get that Burnley were like solid pros and stuff, and I don't really see it with Everton. I see a lot of people that will shirk away from the battle. Like I don't.
Well, he's had them doing the bleep test this week in his first couple of training sessions. He's had the players doing the bleep test, and in his press conference, which I just caught up with before speaking to you guys this morning, he said that actually there's plenty of good players in the Everton squad, and he only feels like bringing players in a transfer window is worth it if they're better than what Everton already had. And he's convinced that they're just low on confidence and they're good enough to saw at the table.
I don't buy into that, to be honest. I think that's something you say when you couldn't spend. You can't tell me you've got 40 million in your pocket and you don't, and you just chose not to spend it. Like there's at least two players out there that you can get in the space of, let's be honest, like the move for Gordon went through on deadline day, but it was in the works for a week before that. So they knew they were getting the money. So could they not have, you know, if they had a plan upstairs, they could have planned way better. They could have had two players in at least, one being a striker, one being a midfielder that can pass the ball, because in the middle, they haven't got any creativity. They've got some decent players, but I don't think they mould into a team very well. I think the right back position's really, really poor. That Patterson doesn't look, in my opinion, good enough to play in the Premier League. Left back's an issue. Mikalenko has not looked very good. Idrissa Garner Gay in midfield has just played like a player that came from PSG and he's playing for Everton and doesn't feel like I think he feels like he's better than Everton and he's not putting in 100%. He's not the old Idrissa Gay who was so good that he got to PSG. He's sort of down in tools a little bit. Onana's doing his best, but he's pretty much a one-man midfield in there. And Damari Gray's the best player they've got. And he was 1.7 million signed by Rafa Benitez. So they all give Rafa Benitez stick, Everton fans, saying, oh, you know, we didn't want him, we never wanted him, he should never have been here. I think without Damari Gray, they'd have been even lower down the table because he started the season pretty well. I think he's Everton's top scorer. Calvert-Lewin's just picking up, you know, hamstring and thigh injuries and ankle injuries and all sorts of stuff. He's not playing. Morpay, 20 million. He was rubbish. He was rubbish before you signed him. Don't know why he signed him for 20 million quid. But there's big problems at Everton. But it's a test of how good Dyche is as a manager. Can you turn these sort of talented but maybe lacking in attitude type of players into hard-working pros that you've seen at Burnley, like the likes of Johan Berg-Gudmundsson? Was never the best right midfielder in the world, but you'd struggle to get past him because he'd put a shift in and he'd run 12k a game. And it was like Barnes and Wood will smash you. They might not dribble past you, they might not score goals, but they will smash you for 90 minutes and you'll be knackered in the 90th minute. So when that corner comes in and Ben Mee attacks it like it owes him money, he's probably gonna beat you to it. So that's that hard work thing, but you've got to instill that in the middle of the season, start of February. You know, you can't shirk any responsibility there. So it's a big one this weekend, I think.
Ironically, Johan Berg-Gudmundsson's just signed a new deal at Burnley, funnily enough.
His name popped into my head.
Well, bringing it back to Everton, Sean Dyche obviously has only been in the building a couple of days, Joel. Do you think he's had enough time to make a difference? How do you see this one going against Arsenal? You've got a minute to tell us.
Well, he's had enough time to get a bleep test in and make them all wear shin pads and socks for the first training session. So
when he walked out in those Copa Mundials, I was thinking, here we go, this is a guy.
That's when
business.
You know he meant business when he walked in.
I saw someone
tweet
saying Sean Dyche walking onto the training ground in his Brexit boots and shorts in -3 degrees. Brilliant.
Just typical, isn't it? I mean, if there was ever a game that they needed a new manager bounce, thank God it's the one against Arsenal, because I think for the rest of football, we wouldn't mind a nice little Everton victory tomorrow. It's hard to see. It's like Marley said, they had a really bad transfer window. Arsenal's was pretty good. And it only feels on paper like it's going to go one way, which is an absolute Arsenal thumping. And unless, like I say, they can get some kind of new manager bounce where the fans feel on side with them, I only see it going one way, to be honest.
And that one way is an Arsenal win, no doubt?
Probably.
Unfortunately. Unfortunately for Joel, who looks disappointed at that fact.
Yeah, because Man United are right on their tails.
It's not for me. It's just for the rest of football. No one wants an Arsenal title win.
I don't know. Do you not think?
No. Yeah, I do. No, I do think they would be insufferable for years.
You would rather Arsenal win?
I would rather Arsenal win the title than Man City.
You've just said it.
Sorry, I'd rather City win the title than Arsenal.
I think that's a strange shout though, because it's your City rivals. It's another year where you're not even the best in your city.
Yeah, it is. But Liverpool. Yeah, but Liverpool have always been our
right. Shut
main,
up. That's full
rivals.
Time. Enough on that. Come on, we're moving
it's
on.
Different.
Right. Let's talk about some of the other Premier League fixtures that are taking place tonight. Friday night, 8 o'clock kickoff. Chelsea against Fulham in a West London derby. I saw Willian actually tweeted about his kids. And mentioning that Chelsea are playing Fulham tonight. Of course, he used to play for Chelsea, didn't he? And his kids apparently are supporting Chelsea in this game tonight. And he said, well, your dad plays for Fulham now. And they went, we don't care. You can play well and score as long as Chelsea win, which I thought was quite funny.
He scored last time, didn't he? So
he did score last time. Yeah, he did. The game we've just mentioned is Saturday lunchtime, 12:30, Everton, Arsenal at Goodison Park. Villa, Leicester, Brentford, Southampton, Brighton, Bournemouth, Manchester United host Crystal Palace, Wolves take on Liverpool, and Newcastle United have the evening kickoff against West Ham. On to Sunday, it's Nottingham Forest against Leeds. And the final game of the weekend is Tottenham Hotspur against Manchester City. And that's our final Fast 3 topic today on Friday's Football Social Daily. Spurs need to close the gap on the top four, Joel. Manchester United and Newcastle currently occupying those positions, whereas Manchester City need to close the gap on Arsenal if they are serious about chasing down the Gunners and winning yet another Premier League title. But the funny thing about this fixture is if Spurs beat Manchester City, that in turn helps out their rivals Arsenal. Always good games between these two teams. How do you see it going?
Well, Spurs are the ones who are a little bit of an Achilles heel to City in the last few years. I know that the last game, that 4-2, I would say is pretty unlucky on Spurs' behalf, just because, you know, they went up 2-0. It looked pretty comfortable, and then City just absolutely demolished them in that second half. But I mean, prior to that, City have never won a game at Spurs since 2018, but that was at Wembley, so they've not really had an official win at Spurs' home ground since 2014, which is a long, long time ago, at White Hart Lane. And I think for Spurs, it just seems like they have some... Their forward line has a kind of setup which really hurts City in terms of their counter-attacking, especially when you've got wing-backs as well, which are countering with the wingers such as Kulusevski and Son. It just seems to hurt them every single time they play, especially in the last 3 or 4 years. But I think for City, this is a massive psychological test, just purely because if they don't get a result from this, let's say they lose, like you say, Arsenal, if they beat Everton, go 8 points clear and with a game in hand, which could take them to 11 points. And I mean, when you get to double figures in terms of the amount of gap between you and your competitors, that's a massive, massive gap to fill. But I still think at this stage, the fact that Arsenal City have still yet to play their two games against each other is way too early to start calling, you know, oh, is it too late for City to catch up? Because it never will be until we can see exactly how those two games are going to go as well, because there's 6 points on the line there. But for Tottenham, I mean, I think I was encouraged by their performance at City, although in that second half it was just complete crumble, complete capitulation. And just like Conte said, it wasn't necessarily that they played bad in that second half. It was just literally four individual errors that continuously cost them. I mean, if you think back to Lloris getting done at his near post when Mahrez scored to make it 3-2. It's just moments like that which completely changed the whole status of the game. So I think for Tottenham, they should go into it with a lot of confidence, purely on the fact that City have still not been able to do anything against them when they play Tottenham at their ground. So I think for me, this is probably closer than what everyone thinks it probably will be. And I'm sure Arsenal fans will be watching on, thinking and hoping that their rivals can do them a favour.
We presume that Antonio Conte won't be on the touchline, Marley, just because he's had this operation to remove his gallbladder, and wishing him all the best. So it's likely that he's not going to be there. We don't know whether Pedro Porro will be, you know, getting his first start for Tottenham. There are a few variable factors. One factor that hasn't really varied too much throughout this season is that Erling Haaland is an absolute goal machine, already miles ahead of everyone else in terms of the Premier League goal scoring charts, and not a great deal behind your hero, Alan Shearer, and indeed Andy Cole, when it comes to the record for the most Premier League goals in a single season. That is 34. Do you think that he breaks it this season?
Yeah, he's got some bullying to do left. Whether he tends to score in bunches, doesn't he? Like, he won't get, if he gets one, he'll usually get at least like two or three. I mean, the guy's got four hat tricks already. Like,
yeah, what's mad is he might not score for two or three games, and then the next game he'll go and score a hat trick to make up for the fact he hasn't scored in the previous games.
Yeah, so it looks like, you know, he's got a, you know, a one in one record, but like, you know, it sort of, that's how it balances out. Remember when he scored 9 for Norway's under 21s in the against like Malaysia or something like that, and it was like this guy could now go 10 games without a goal and still average 1-1, but obviously he carried on scoring anyway and ended up with way more goals than games.
Proper stat padding.
that's Haaland for you. I think I read before that City haven't scored a goal at Spurs' new stadium, never mind get a result there. So that's something that he can have for him as well. I think he'll have probably heard about that and probably thought, yeah, that's for me as well. There's another little bit of history, another record to break, another sort of something to write your name in the history books for, and he'll be up for that. But it's the Spurs thing as well. I think this Conte thing's a huge factor in the game, the fact that he's not going to be there. Probably for the best. I mean, I can't think of many people I would rather watch a game with less than Antonio Conte, because I'm assuming he'll be the same watching it on TV as he is on the touchline, just ranting around, chucking coffee tables around or something like that, and doing his recovery from gallbladder surgery absolutely no good at all. If he's in the hospital, I'd be wary of the nurses, to be honest. But yeah, I think his influence on the touchline is not going to be, it's going to be missed, basically.
Yeah, Antonio Conte likely not to be there as Spurs take on Manchester City in the Premier League on Sunday. That is the final game of the Premier League weekend. So let's take a quick look at the table then before we finish on today's podcast. Arsenal top of the tree, 50 points with 4 wins out of their last 5 games, and they take on Everton, who are in the relegation zone. Manchester City second and 5 points back on 45. Newcastle and Manchester United complete third and fourth respectively, both on 39 points. 3 points off the top 4 are Tottenham Hotspur, who are fifth, and there's a 5-point gap between them and Brighton, who are in sixth. Fulham and Brentford play seventh and eighth, whilst ninth and tenth are Liverpool and Chelsea. Terrible seasons by their standards. Into the bottom half now, Aston Villa, Crystal Palace and Nottingham Forest complete 11th to 13th, while just above the relegation zone on 18 points, Leicester, Leeds and West Ham, 17 points in 17th are Wolves, and the relegation trio, the place is held at the moment by Bournemouth, Everton and bottom of the table, Southampton. Everton and Saints both on 15 points each, respectively. So that's how things look in terms of the Premier League table. This has been Friday's Fast 3 on Football Social Daily. Don't forget, you can still listen to our interview with Matt Jarvis, the former West Ham, Wolves and England winger, which was released yesterday. He told some cracking stories about life at Wolves under Mick McCarthy and even the time he had to cut short a lad's holiday to Marbella so he could meet Mick McCarthy and sign terms at Molineux. Some cool stories there from Jarvo, so hit subscribe and that way you won't miss it. Next week, you'll be hearing from former Manchester United Champions League winner Wes Brown. He'll be joining us in the studio, so make sure you hit subscribe, as I say, and that way you will not miss any further episodes right throughout the course of Monday to Friday. And that's when we'll next see you, on Monday morning. So see you then here on Football Social Daily.
Football Social Daily is a VoiceWorks sport production for the Sports Social Podcast Network.